Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, December 19th, 2019. World Food Program's chief says he uses the F word to warn about South Sudan's acute food insecurity situation.
Failure to raise the money we need during this crisis period very well could mean the loss of lives. It could mean famine conditions.
And the army reports another deadly attack by South Sudan's NAS forces.
There was a raid on our defensive position at Kulipapa on Juba Yei Road. It happened last night, and as a result, we lost one serviceman, a private.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations World Food Program Executive Director warned today that more than 4 million South Sudanese may slide into famine in the next 6 months if funding gaps are not urgently met to enable the WFP to pre-position food aid on time. David Beasley says the food insecurity situation was worsened by the recent floods, which affected nearly a million South Sudanese. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from the capital, Juba.
WFP Executive Director David Beasley, who is visiting South Sudan in the wake of floods that have destroyed the crops, livestock and livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese, calls the food security situation in the country a crisis that requires urgent intervention.
And so we're now pleading to the donors that please, we cannot turn our back on the innocent families and children out there. Failure to raise the money that we need during this crisis period very well could mean the loss of lives. It could mean famine conditions.
Aid agencies say nearly 1 million people need assistance after their animals, produce and other resources were destroyed by the flood waters. Basically, once if the crisis is not addressed quickly, it could be a source of conflict within South Sudanese communities and cause a wave of immigration to other countries. Matthew Hollingworth, the WFP country director in South Sudan, says 4.5 million affected people now face acute and emergency levels of food insecurity. Hollingworth says when people face acute or emergency levels of food insecurity, they may slide into catastrophic food insecurity, which means a state of famine, and that can lead to many deaths if not addressed quickly. He says South Sudan is already at the worst level of malnutrition.
We are already, from a nutrition perspective, above the emergency threshold for malnutrition in the world today, with 16% malnutrition in young children, and 15% is the global emergency threshold. When you're above that, you've already crossed a red line. This country has already crossed that line.
Hollingworth says WFP may be forced to scale down its operations if the aid agency does not secure the required funding in the expected time. He says while the year-long cessation of hostilities by the parties to the conflict has improved farmers' agricultural activities and food production output, other drivers, including the recent flooding, have remained troubling factors.
The situation that people have felt because of past historic fighting in their areas, the situation because of droughts in the previous years, the situation because of the economy, and the very fragile economy across the country, inflation that again has accumulated over the past years. And then with all of that, to then be hit by the floods that have had a devastating effect.
Basile says it is time the parties to South Sudan's peace deal recognize that food insecurity is a threat to national security.
We need this conflict to end so that people can go on with their lives. This nation can be the beacon of hope that so many believe in, because people are good people, and the people, I think, can achieve great things. They just need to be given that opportunity. And right now, nothing but war and conflict in the way.
WFP officials say Maban and parts of Jonglei State are expected to be the hardest hit areas by the famine conditions. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan's military says National Salvation Front rebel forces raided its military outpost 40 kilometers west of Juba town yesterday, killing at least one soldier and taking women and children hostages. This fresh attack comes while President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar are expected to meet again tomorrow in Juba for more talks as the latest deadline to form a unity government fast approaches. Dima Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan military spokesman Major General Lul Rai Kwong says rebel forces from the National Salvation Front, loyal to Thomas Cirilo, attacked their outpost early Wednesday at a place called Kulipapa.
I can confirm to you that there was a raid on our defensive position at Kulipapa on Juba Yei Road. It happened last night, and as a result, we lost one serviceman, a private.
Suba Samuel, Nasi spokesman, says their forces were provoked by the latest offensive carried out by government soldiers in parts of Yei River State, but denies having knowledge about yesterday's reported raid on the SSPDF position.
What happened is that we have what we call effective offensive or effective attack, effective defense. In case you know very well that these people are moving, tracking their bases, what you should do is now you go to where they are planning to frustrate the efforts of continuing with this attack. So if anything happened like that, I think it is a counter move to preempt the strategy of attacking opposition.
Lul says NAS forces have devised a new strategy that includes capturing women and children at the SSPDF barracks.
Those victims, the woman and the child who were abducted.
Those victims, the woman and a child who were abducted, are part of the family of the soldiers who are staying there. And this is the second time in less than a week for NAS forces to attack one of our bases and also to abduct. At Lasso, when they attacked our defensive position, they ended up abducting 8 people, including the wife of a base commander. So it looks like NAS has a new strategy of abduction of civilians.
Suba says he was not informed about a raid yesterday.
I'm not aware of that incident of a woman who was abducted, but then if it is attacked and captured, then that will be a different thing. And then abduction is different. Because when you attack an area and you find a person there, that is going to be a captured person, not an abducted person.
NAS and the SSPDF have been trading accusations for 2 weeks about who started renewed waves of violence in parts of Yei River State. The National Salvation Front is a non-signatory to the September Revitalized Peace Agreement, but in 2017, Cirilo signed the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Some Catholics in Juba have condemned the rejection of the newly appointed Archbishop of Juba by a group of people calling themselves the indigenous clergy and faithful. The Catholics say the position of the Archbishop is a national position that is always appointed by the Pope, and they're urging the indigenous to stop tribalizing and politicking the Catholic faith. Winnie Serino has the story for VOA from Juba.
The choir of St. Charles Lwanga Chapel sings a hymn during last Sunday's Mass in Juba. Afterward, some of the congregants expressed their disappointment over the way some religious leaders and politicians want to divide the church by tribe. In a letter seen by South Sudan in Focus, signed by indigenous clergy and faithful, entitled The Impasse on the Appointment of the Archbishop of Juba, the group says it is shocked with the appointment of Bishop Stephen Ameyo Martin as the Archbishop of Juba, despite their plea for dialogue over allegations that some indigenous priests were rejected to be appointed bishops in other dioceses and that Bishop Ameyo has 2 concubines and 6 children. It says they had expected suspension of the appointment immediately, but since their concerns were ignored, they will respond with proportional means. Mike Kuyo Johnson, a Catholic at St. Charles Lwanga, says it is the policy of the Catholic Church that the Pope appoints anyone as a bishop, including the whites, to be bishops in Africa and vice versa. He warns the Church is not a political arena for a few certain individuals to have their way.
A church is an organization that is based on faith. So they should just refrain from all these allegations, taking church activities as a political issue. This is a church. They should be really true Christians that can work on the compromise. they should not influence the indigenous, like they should go on a strike, protesting against all this, the appointment. That is not good. We are the church and we are Catholic, and we should be working on the Catholic principles and values.
Anna Mario Tim, another Catholic at St. Charles Luanga, says a true believer in the Catholic Church, especially a church leader, cannot threaten the activities of the church. She says, what matters is the fact that a new bishop is coming to support Bishop Pauline Lekodu, who is advanced in age. Otim points out that the Pope has the final say in the Catholic Church.
We have no option to say no. Like Jesus, when appointed Peter to be the rock, the key for the Catholic, nobody said no. And now he left this work for our Pope. Pope has the right to point any time a person, the Spirit leads him to appoint.
Anthony Joshua, a Catholic at Holy Rosary Parish, says he is not impressed with the drama over the new archbishop. He says the Catholic Church is a universal church in which priests and bishops are allocated to different countries across the world, regardless of their ethnic background. Joshua says the so-called indigenous clergy and faithful should have raised their concerns as soon as Bishop Ameyu was appointed Bishop of Torit.
Where are those people when they nominate him as a Bishop of Torit? Well, there's the same people here, they went from Juba here to Torit, and they celebrate him and they welcome him. So now, because he's going to be Archbishop of Juba, so that issue will come. And this is not the Catholic faith that you are going to threaten people. This is not the Catholic faith.
Another Catholic from Holy Rosary Parish, Angelo Abraham McCoy, says he is disappointed with how the church is getting politicized and divided along ethnic lines.
It shows that we are not part of the Catholic faith, which is under the Pope, and the Pope is the one who appointed the bishop to be Archbishop of Juba. If we are taking it that way of tribalism way, we are just out from the war, and the only place which was united us is the church. But now if we are taking this one from the political view to Catholic churches, that means we are going to destroy our country.
The letter says, quote, Your Eminence, we cannot overstress that there is absolutely no chance for Bishop Stephen Ameyu to serve as the Archbishop of Juba because there will be no cooperation by the clergy and the faithful of the Archdiocese of Juba. It says should Bishop Ameyu accept the appointment, then he will regret because he will be spending the rest of his life protecting himself rather than shepherding the people. End quote. The group says the doors of all churches in the Archdiocese of Juba will be closed on the day Bishop Ameyu is due to be installed. The group also says the indigenous people of Juba will cancel all contracts and withdraw all lands given to the Archdiocese of Juba. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A momentous anniversary in Sudan. Find out what it is when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
How can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
First of all, change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese are commemorating the one-year anniversary of the December Revolution, which led to the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Some Khartoum residents say certain freedoms, including freedom of speech, have improved. Others applaud the transitional government's efforts to expedite transitional justice. Michael Atit has this report from Khartoum.
A year ago today, thousands of Sudanese in different parts of the country, including the capital Khartoum, began mass demonstrations against former President Bashir's government over shortages of bread and fuel and skyrocketing prices. A few months later, riots swept across the entire country, leading to Bashir's ouster by military leader on April 11, 2019. Many Sudanese here say, though there has been improvements made since that day, certain freedoms are still not being observed by the transitional government. Speaking in Arabic, Khartoum resident Yusuf Bashir Zain says, even though people are still mourning their loved ones killed during protests and a mass sit outside military headquarters, political change has become a reality in Sudan.
First of all, I believe the first and biggest achievement of the revolution is the overthrow of the previous regime. I regard this as a big victory and a first step towards building a good future for our nation, a civilian and a free democratic country.
Zain says he is happy Bashir was convicted last weekend in Khartoum for crimes he committed against his own people. But he says the former dictator must still face the more serious charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity leveled against him in The Hague. Bashir was sentenced last Saturday on corruption charges and has been ordered by the court to be kept in reformatory for 2 years. Another Sudanese citizen, Samia Abdurrahman, who hailed from the conflicted region of southern Kordofan, applauds the transitional government for working to provide basic necessities for citizens. Speaking in Arabic, Abdurrahman says she wants to see the guns in her village of Kauda go silent so that community can have access to humanitarian aid and other services.
Now, there is sufficient cash in the banks, and there is a bit of improvement on the provision of fuel and many more. I expect them to continue to provide basic services to the people, such as transportation, economy, and education for our children.
Musab Sadiq is a resident of Omdurman neighborhood. Speaking in Arabic, Sadiq says the transitional government has a long way to go to realize the revolution's objectives. He says thousands of Sudanese want to see corrupt leaders of the previous regime convicted for their wrongdoing so that others can learn and avoid misusing public property.
This is work to prevent stealing of the public property. Anybody that holds a public office should be accountable for their work. In every society, there are people who have bad hearts, but they should strive to be selective in their appointment and select those who love this country. We need to avoid looking at individuals and focus on the interest of the country.
Another Khartoum resident, Ahmed Abdul Wahab Mubarak, blames the previous regime for destroying the Sudan's economy. Speaking in Arabic, Mubarak says achieving lasting peace and restoring the economy will still be a big challenge for the transitional government.
First of all, they should focus on restoration of the economy because through a good economy, everything else will be good. They should also strive with the American government to remove the name of the Sudan from the list of countries sponsoring terrorism. This way, automatically, life will become cheap and easy for common people.
According to a report released by Human Rights Watch last month, at least 120 people were killed on June 3rd during the military crackdown and in the following days. Hundreds were injured and dozens more were reported missing. The report states that such acts against peaceful protesters could amount to crimes against humanity. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Uganda's International Crimes Division Court has issued a local arrest warrant for Bashir if he enters that country. The International Criminal Court has criticized Uganda in the past for hosting Bashir, who is wanted by the court for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Darfur. VOA's Catherine Nambi has more details for VOA from Kampala.
The Ugandan rights group Legal Brains Trust filed a petition in court saying the government's failure to arrest former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir violated the Rome Statute, which Uganda has signed. Isaac Semakade is the petitioner's lawyer.
This kind of impunity is not acceptable because it offends. It offends the victims of injustice in Darfur, for whom the indictments are the first step to accessing justice. It shows that the government of Uganda does not respect the principle of equality, the principle of legality that all persons should be treated equally before the law. So some indictees are allowed to roam through Uganda.
Justice Henry Peter Adonyo, the head of Uganda's International Crimes Division, ruled Thursday morning that Uganda had failed its international obligations when it allowed Bashir to visit. The International Criminal Court indicted Bashir on charges of masterminding crimes against humanity in the Darfur region. Up to 300,000 people may have died and millions were displaced in a civil war that erupted there in 2003. The 75-year-old Bashir faces charges of murder, genocide, forcible transfer, extermination and rape, among others, according to ICC arrest warrants issued in 2010. However, he is now in jail in Sudan after having been convicted of corruption earlier this month. Nicholas Opio, a Ugandan human rights lawyer, was in court Thursday.
The court had five findings. First, the court found that in failing to arrest Omar al-Bashir on the two occasions he came to Uganda was a violation of Uganda's obligation under international law, namely under the Rome Statute, under the ICC Act in Uganda, and the UN Security Council Resolution 1593 of 2005. Second, the court issued its own arrest warrant and said if Omar al-Bashir comes within the territory under the control of Uganda in any time in the future, there's an arrest warrant issued by the court.
2 years ago, Uganda refused to arrest Bashir in Kampala on an ICC warrant in 2017. Uganda's government argued that it was not its duty to arrest a leader of a sovereign state who was officially invited into the country. Critics of that position say, as signatory to the Rome Statute, the treaty that established the ICC, Uganda had an obligation to arrest Bashir. Uganda is one of the countries referred to the United Nations Security Council for sanctioning over failing to arrest Bashir. Others are Russia, Jordan, and Chad. In April, Uganda expressed readiness to offer Bashir and his family asylum when the military forced him out of office after months of mass protests. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The Democratic-controlled U.S. House of Representatives voted to impeach President Donald J. Trump last night. Lawmakers passed charges he abused the power of the presidency to benefit himself politically. Charges Trump obstructed Congress's efforts to investigate him also passed. The historic vote fell almost entirely along party lines, sending the case for removing Trump from office to the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate. Trump is the third president in 230 years of U.S. history to be impeached. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi warned Democrats not to cheer the historic moment, saying it is tragic the president's reckless actions make impeachment necessary. He gave us no choice. The Senate will oversee the proceedings. Republican Majority Leader Dave McConnell warned Democrats about their actions.
Speaker Pelosi's House just gave into a temptation that every other House in our history has managed to resist. They impeach a president whom they do not even allege has committed an actual crime known to our laws. They've impeached simply because they disagree with a presidential act and question the motive behind it.
The vote ends the House's divisive three-month investigation into the president that began with a whistleblower complaint alleging Trump held up nearly $400 million in congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine in return for a personal political favor from Ukraine's leader to investigate political rival Joe Biden and his son. Finally, we told you yesterday about a wheelchair basketball tournament sponsored by the International Committee of the Red Cross that took place last weekend in Juba. The competition helped people with disabilities enjoy sports while reuniting South Sudanese from different states. In part two of our series on the tournament, Ding Magut tells us more about the coach that made it all possible.
ICRC Disability Sports and Inclusion Advisor James Mark from the western city of Denver, Colorado, became a paralegic after an accident as a high jumper with the University of Oregon track team. The 42-year-old says he has helped with wheelchair sports programs in Cambodia, India, Palestine, Ethiopia, and now South Sudan.
We also want to establish among the community that people with physical disabilities are capable of much more than maybe what they have been led to believe or what society assumes about them. So we would like to see them take what they're learning in basketball and show that they can also have a job or run a business or go to school and really improve their We want them to expand their experience off the court so that whether they have a full-time job or run a business or go to higher education, that they're experiencing the full inclusion.
Deputy Head of Delegation at the ICRC, Katia Lawrence, says physical rehabilitation programs have helped to improve the mobility of people with disabilities.
In 2018, in the three centers that we are supporting, we have admitted no less than 720 patients, clients, fitting them with different kinds of prosthesis, which equals to about two people admitted every single day, which is quite remarkable, which probably doesn't even go anywhere near the number of people living in parts of South Sudan.
The chairperson of South Sudan Special Olympics, Rebecca Joshua Okwachi, says this year South Sudan participated in the Special Olympics World Games in Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and South Sudan players won gold medals for the 100 and 200 meter races.
So far, we have four athletes who participated in the international games in Dubai, and they got medals. This is South Sudan, so we are recruiting early this year. So we have them. Some of them cannot even talk, but they can run like nobody. And parents and families are encouraged to bring them out. In our communities, we hide them, and we feel ashamed when they are there. But I just want to encourage the families that bring them out, give them a chance, and we can support that, and they will change, and you will be surprised that your own child is changed.
The ICRC says wheelchair basketball competition will end stigma in communities that exclude physically disabled people in the country when they see their potential on the basketball court. For VOA News, I'm Ding Magot in Juba.
The King. That is our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Ikole by Fale Ipupa. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for making us a part of your evening tonight. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Aïda, Pati, Assambe, Gorbi, le Valois. Allez, Sili, Jolo, Mama. Allez, Sili, Jolo. Junior, Mapousso. Amérima, Amérima. Moi, c'est un beau-fort. Tonton, la main, Balaba. Le valable pastoral, trésor, Moukouna, pasteur de Nilès.
Madame James Bond, Didier Drogba, le numéro 9, Samuel Eto'o, Yaya Touré.